Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go friggin' nuts. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's nice, hot, and then there is aroma of sweaty ball sack in the air. A very special guest, speaking of which, that was inappropriate for FCC regulations, actually, and there's probably a lot of people out there who are offended by that statement, and I don't
apologize. You know, what goes in your plate does not go here, you know.
All right, so we've still got Rick Simpson, and now we're also joined by Jan Irvin, and these two haven't actually met before. Which is good because, you know, Jan's very, very well knowledgeable about pretty much anything, and cannabis is a big topic for him as well.
Is that Simpson, cannabis oil, Rick Simpson?
That's me.
Of course we know each other. I apologize. Yeah, I had you on my show several years ago.
Okay. I've done so many. I've, like everybody, like Vinny, I think I lost track of them all.
Yeah, well, I was a good friend of Jack Ayers for 18 years, and, you know, I knew, you know, I was aware of the situation when you were in Europe for a while. Where are you now?
Right now I'm in Canada, but I'll be leaving again in about a month. I don't think I'll ever live in Canada again. I've had enough of, you know, the British Empire, I believe.
Right. Well, how did you, so they dropped the charges against you, or what happened?
Yeah, they went through the charges last spring. I mean, the charges were all bogus anyway. The RCMP here in Canada were trying to frame me because that's what the government wanted. But, it's changed my outlook on, it's changed my outlook on Canada. It's changed my outlook on the whole world. But I certainly envy you, sir, for having the honor of knowing Jack Hare for 18 years. I knew Jack for about a year and a half, 2 years before he passed away. And that man affected my life in so many ways. I mean, like when he died, I remember I tried to write a piece for the internet, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I never even met Jack face to face. We've talked many, many times for hours on the phone, but when I tried to write like something about him to put on the internet, the tears would just flow. I couldn't control them, and I mean, I'm not the kind of guy that cries, so I can't even describe the effect that Jack Hare had on my life. But it was an honor to get to know the man, and I think he's the greatest leader the hemp movement ever had.
Yeah, well, I think so, and he was a good friend of mine for a long time, and I threw dirt on his grave and all of that. I'm just looking up your show here on my website to see when you were on. You were on Jack Hare and Rick Simpson interviews, Cannabis Run from the Cure, and that was episode number 17 from February 8, 2009.
Yeah.
So that's been a while, huh?
I hear interviews sometimes. I know a friend of mine, he'll play them to me, and I don't even remember doing them. You know, I've done so many of them now.
Sure.
But it's great to be able to get the word out, and through people like Vinny and yourself. I mean, you know, we're all working together here. And brother, we're going to change this world. We're going to make it a decent place, and it's got to happen in the near future.
Well, hopefully so. But, you know, one thing I've discovered is that we've got to stop believing in government to solve our problems, because they're the ones that created the mess in the first place. And, you know, so the ad veracundium fallacy is what government is based on. And in fact, my most recent show, we did a episode with Jose Barrera that talks about supernatural magic and spelling is mind control. And essentially what these guys do, these elites, they put on fancy costumes, they perform a little ritual, and then they write something down, and then they get a herd of people to believe it. See how that works?
Yeah.
It's purely magic, and it's a ritual. And this is the entire foundation of government is based on this, and it's also based on the ad veracundium or appeal to authority fallacy. So, you know, essentially it's the entire thing is based on you giving up your autonomy to somebody else every time you go and vote, etc. And the whole thing is based on black magic and rituals. So once you're aware of how it's just magic and spelling, literally writing something down, just like, you know, in ancient times, how they would create a god to do their deeds is they would write it down. So you write a book about it. You write the New Testament and you say, Yahweh gives me everything in Israel, Jerusalem, blah, blah. And then you just cast that spell. And then you get all these people to go around and kill everybody who don't want to support your Zionism, right? And it's just by these Levitical priests who cast that spell 2,300, 2,400 years ago or whenever they cast it.
Have you ever seen those television shows where a magician will do a trick that appears really amazing, but then after they've performed the trick in front of you, they explain how you did it?
Right? Sure. Well, you know, Darren Brown, the British magician, he exposes how all of this kind of stuff works, and that's what his show has been dedicated to for like 8 or 10 years now. In fact, recently he did a whole expose on mind control through hypnosis, and if you could get somebody to go out and assassinate somebody else, such as, what's his name from the Bobby Kennedy assassination? Sirhan. And he pulled it off successfully, and he got somebody to walk into a movie theater, pull a gun loaded with blanks, and pull it on, who was the guy from V for Vendetta, one of the lead actors from that movie.
Hugo Weaving.
Right, got this guy to go in, pull the gun on him, and pull the trigger, and right in front of a whole audience full of people. And so this type of mind control is possible. But see, that's the extreme point of it. And what people don't get is that mind control, et cetera, is so much simpler than those types of extravagant things. And I just gave the example of, of that and... the whole spelling and writing laws and things like that. But another way that mind control is used is just by logical fallacies and people that don't study their grammar and logic. So anybody who studies their logical fallacies is far more difficult to mind control than somebody who doesn't know them at all and who believes whatever fallacies that come their way.
Do you reckon that the possibility for mind control is not entirely dissimilar from the Jedi mind trick? Like it only works on the weak minded. This isn't the Colorado shooter
You know what makes a weak minded person, but a lack of primary education. See, all they had to do is, as you and I talked about last time, Vinny, was get people to put their logic before their grammar. All you have to do is get people to try and explain why. Before they ask who, what, where, or when, right? And they will always come to a false conclusion. Well, how is how you explain something afterward. It's who, what, where, when, why, and how. So, you know, you gather in your information, you process it, which is logic, removing all of the fallacies, removing the contradictions out, and then you express it, how, the rhetoric, to other people. And all they do is they simply get people to put why before who, what, where, and when, or logic before grammar. And so when you look at the old, the ancient classical seven liberal arts of the trivium and quadrivium, in fact, they trivialize the trivium so that it's no longer important in our Wundtian PhD system. But what they've done is they've gotten people to stop thinking critically simply by getting them to believe, well, in Immanuel Kant, for instance, he's probably the worst of all of them because he's created this whole meme out there today that you can't know truth, that you shouldn't trust your five senses, that you shouldn't go out and verify any citation or anything. And so, and then that goes, as David Harriman, who I had on my show, shows, as well as in his lecture series, The Philosophic Corruption of Physics, is that it was Immanuel Kant who created this entire nonsense of quantum physics, which, of course, goes straight into the New Age movement and all of the pillow-sitting positive thinking. Hey, you know, don't show me anything. That's negative. You know, the government would never do that. This person would never do that. That could never happen. That's too negative. You know, so it's this whole process of killing the messenger and using fallacies to dismiss information rather than verifying them yourself first and saying, hey, you know what? This person is actually telling the truth. So, you know, and whenever you bring up this type of stuff, people who have fallen hook, line, and sinker for quantum physics will tell you, well, you know, there is no truth. Truth is arbitrary. Really? is 1 + 1, 5, 10, 20. Tell that to the grocer next time she steals your money when you go to the store. Every time you park your car in the parking lot out front, isn't it a different spot when you walk out? Really? Is truth? Are you that dumb? Really? So, you know, why don't you just, you know, wish your car right over here? I mean, seriously, if you really believe that your car is going to be in a different spot every time you walk out of the store, or maybe even you're in Uranus, you know, the planet, excuse me, you know, I'm sorry, but these people really have to snap out of this. You can find truth. 1 + 1 is always going to be 2. And, you know, if you take 2 apples and you put them together, you're going to get 4 apples. And it's going to happen like that every time. And it's when you find a contradiction or irrationality, this is when you know that there is a lie. The second somebody tells you 2 + 2 = 5, you go, ah, I see what you're up to. And so then, you know, you have to be able to use common sense and filtering the fallacies and BS out of your thoughts, not just the information that's coming in, but what you send downstream as well.
Mm. Yeah, I've always said that we live in a world full of illusions, and the biggest problem with that is that we continue to delude ourselves. And a friend of mine was criticized by a friend of his, saying, oh, you're just disillusioned. And you're like, oh, really? Are you criticizing me saying I'm no longer operating under a delusion?
You know, I love Bob Alamede's take on this too, because Bob always says, you know, all of these people that are standing there against the use of this medicine, you know, all of those misinformed masses, you know, Bob simply says they're cannabinoid deficient, and I think he's right.
Well, you know, endogenous cannabinoids are an important part of the entire serotonin system and how the whole body works. So, you know, and it's funny, as I do my best thinking and my best writing and work when I'm high. And in fact, right now I'm not, and I usually don't do radio interviews when I'm not. So I'm having a little moment here right now of...
yeah, you're pretty average today, bro.
Yeah. Hey, Vic, can you bring... something loaded.
It's like, honey, can you bring one here?
You know? You can't smoke dope on the internet.
Oh, I live in California. We can do it here.
No, but I mean, this is an amazing, you know, the substance itself, the oil and the miracles that it produces is just, it's mind-boggling. And I understand myself, you know, how people have a hard time grasping it, because it took me a long time to grasp it. You know, I couldn't believe
it. It only took me 2 fingers to grasp mine.
No, but I mean, it's so hard to believe that one simple substance can do all of these wonderful things. But, you know, when you see it over and over and over again, like I did, and the beauty of the beauty of this whole thing is that I do, is that it can't be, you know, it can't be disproven. It's so simple, any fool can go out and make the medicine and prove it to themselves.
Well, you know, you can't prove a negative anyway. That would be impossible. But, you know, the onus of proof is always on the person making the claim. So you got to be careful of that one. But, yeah, but I think the evidence for cannabis and cancer and everything is out there. And, you know, and in fact, right here on my desktop, I do believe I have an entire file that I have saved of cancer study, endocannabinoids and THC cancer studies, both ready and open. And one of them has like 20. The other one is endocannabinoids that we were just discussing. And yeah, I've got 19 current medical studies right in front of me on using THC and cannabinoids as treatment for cancers and various types of cancers. We've got prostate cancer, human glioblastoma, multiform cells, etc. And
I love it how doctors always just think because they're able to say something in Latin that it makes them educated. Like, for example, you've got osteoporosis. Really, I've got holes in my bones. How brilliant of you!
Yes,
you know, I hate that.
It's like, go ahead.
They say, like, there's 100 different types of over 100 different types of cancer. You know, and a lot of people, when they come to me, they'll go on, you know, I have this specific type. It's very rare. And I always tell them the same thing. I said, look, I don't care what kind of cancer you have. You know, this oil is an effective treatment for every type of cancer that I've ever come in contact with. And it's like I said, you know, if the oil can't help you, you're not going to find anything that will. And you sure as hell better not look at the medical system to give you any help.
Yeah, it's like if the oil can't help you, then God help you.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I see. And also, if you refuse to use the oil and you'd rather try your hand at some kind of Sesame Street tickle me chemo type methodology, you know, you're going to die. This is the thing. And I remember I told my father this as well, he was going to get all this treatment and stuff like that. And I said, Dad, these doctors are going to kill you. Okay? And he did die eventually of it after getting into remission, taking ozone therapy and things like that from a naturopath doctor that I know named Dr. David Holden, who's brilliant. And he then refused the treatment because he told him, you have to then deal with your emotional issues because there's only so much the physical world and everything and can heal you now. You've got to start putting things right with your ex-wife, you know, my mother kind of thing. And instead of putting things right with the ex-wife, he's like, oh, I'd rather die than make peace with it. And he died.
It's funny that you say that, though, Vinny, is a few years ago I interviewed this woman, Barbara Ehrenreich. She wrote a book called Bright Sided, How the Relentless Promotion of Positive Thinking Has Undermined America. And she and a number of other researchers have gone through the medical literature on positive thinking and cancer to see if it has any effect. They can't find any evidence of it whatsoever.
Well, I mean, when you look at the patients and everything that came to me, the bottom line is if a patient walked in, they wanted a cancer treatment, I gave it, if I had it, I gave it to them. But the thing is, I mean, I would be happy to give a patient 2 ounces of oil, and I'd be happy to take 2 ounces of oil myself at the same time while the patient's taking it, because I know what this wonderful substance can do. Now, tell me what doctor, if he gave you chemo, what doctor would take chemo along with you? What doctor would take radiation along with you? You know, they know what this stuff is.
If I took 2 ounces of weed, though, I'd be out for a week.
We're coming to break, unfortunately. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Rick Santagnano.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleeding uranium in the mortar? What you know
about APAC controlling the reporter? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And Jan Irvin is my guest from GnosticMedia.com. That's Gnostic with a G because he's just so gangster. And also there was the other thing that I'm really honored to have Jan on because he gets requests all the time to come on people's radio shows. And he's done so many that it is just kind of, it's past the excitement phase for him. The fact that I was able to get him on and at short notice, not 20 minutes before the show started today, Jan agreed to come on. I was like, whoa. Like, seriously, bro. You are quite famous, quite awesome. And as I said before the break, before we brought you on, you cut off fallacies like a professional castration artist.
Ouch. Hmm. Boy, that sounds dangerous when you put it like that, huh?
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the, you turn fallacies into a eunuch, more or less.
That's pretty fun. I think you mean to say impotent.
Either or.
There you go.
Hey, well, last time we were talking about, I think it was on December 21st, 2012, on the Dark Occulted Mysticism show with Fred Erickson and James Wright.
Yeah, that sounds right. Did I ever, I think I posted that to my YouTube page. I forgot to put it up on my website. Oh, well.
Who cares? And the thing that we discussed on there is how very little there was actually predicted for 2012 on the Mayan calendar, and how hugely it was blown out of proportion, and how much stuff was just straight up made up.
Oh, I guess the only ones that were right about their predictions were the ones who said it was all bullshit, huh?
Pretty much, and unfortunately, we're under FCC regulations, so you can't say that. You have to say BS, you know. And,
yes, excuse me. Okay, so you're on FCC regulations now.
Yeah, and I at times like these, I like to remind the FCC, if you, freedom of speech, yeah, right. I mean, look, you know, have you ever sworn in front of somebody and they get really angry with you and say that you're using offensive language? You know what my response to that is? Excuse me, are you over 18? Then deal with it like an adult. I don't get what people are, you know, trying to tell people how they should speak or shouldn't speak or how they should express themselves and things like that. And of course, it takes a government agency like the FCC to do something like this, because an ordinary, decent, logical person or rational person, communication's communication.
Well, you know, everybody needs mommy and daddy government to handle things for them. Otherwise, everything would just be out of control. And, you know, who composes mommy and daddy government but a bunch of us that put on costumes and then go around with clubs and guns and tell everybody else what to do, usually the more psychotic amongst us. So I guess we'll tone it down and keep the FCC off your back, because when I talked to you out of Australia, you remember free,
it's New Zealand,
excuse me, out of New Zealand. So what show are we on this time?
The Vinnie Eastwood Show.
It's not out of New Zealand now.
It is out of New Zealand, but it gets broadcast through AmericanFreedomRadio.com across America. And I think I'm just now gaining UK affiliates, and there's a couple of New Zealand affiliates as well. I would love some Australian affiliates. I really, really would. And in fact, the Australians, if you have a look at the cities in terms of who visits the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, number one city is my home city of Auckland. I think the third one down is like Sydney, Australia or something like that. So there's plenty of Australians that listen to the show, but no radio broadcasters that are brave enough to broadcast it.
Well, sure. You know, they're not brave enough to rebroadcast my show either. So, and my show's been out for going on 4.5 years now. So, but you know, I've got a decent audience, and it's just, you know, my topics are too deep for them, and they get afraid, I suppose.
Well, I think fear comes about when there's no wiggle room. And I've noticed that when you argue or when you make points, you do not leave wiggle room. And so it basically makes people uncomfortable, and you back people into a corner sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
How's that?
In that they can't argue with you. When you come up with an argument.
Well, no, it's
they have to work really, really hard. They have to admit that they've been wrong.
Is my audio still working? Is my audio still going? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the issue is, and it goes back to the trivium and having a systematic method for going through information and filtering the fallacies out of the information coming in and out of any information you're sending out. And fallacy comes from the Latin fallare, to lie. And so fallacies are lies that we tell ourselves and others. Like if I present some information, you know, somebody says, well, you know, they were talking about marijuana, so anything he says can't be valid. Well, that would be an ad hominem attack, and they're killing the messenger. So rather than using ad hominem attacks like, there's a new one each day practically that I see. This morning, disinfo.com posted my new episode, and somebody up there said, well, this guy has Christian influence, and the Christians are influencing him. Because I did one interview with Ian T. Taylor, who did an investigation 28 years ago on Darwin and the New World Order, and he came across much of the same information that I did on my recent article investigating Gordon Wasson and Aldous Huxley and Terence McKenna, et cetera, regarding the foundations of psychedelics. And all of a sudden, I realized that Julian Huxley was a part of the Eugenics Foundation. Both Julian and Aldous Huxley's grandfather, Sir Thomas Henry Huxley, worked with Charles Darwin and was Darwin's bulldog. And these guys are actually who created these very theories. And so, you know, when you get in and you start looking at the evidence, you know, here's the evidence. I mean, if you want to sit down and go with me over the evidence, I'll be happy to. But if you're just going to say, well, that guy's a Christian and you're influenced by him, which is a poisoning the well fallacy and a guilt by association, because he's a Christian, I'm guilty because I associated with him, and therefore none of my research could possibly be valid because of having this one guest on my show, of which, even in the intro, it said, you know, we're going to put our religious differences aside and focus on the research. Those who have studied the trivium should know not to throw the baby out with the bathwater and kill the messenger, and we'll just focus on the work and, you know, be adults about it rather than name-calling to make up excuses and lies about why we shouldn't look into something. You know, so it's just a really simple process. So if somebody won't look at evidence before they debate you, then there's nothing to debate with them. They're not logical, rational people. You know, oh, Vinny, you know, you have red hair, so you're completely full of you know what. And you have a goatee, or you wear a green shirt on Wednesdays, or your uncle's gay, or you visited a state that was dominant with Republicans, or when you were a child, you believed in Santa Claus. You know, you know, I mean, they'll just make up any sort of irrational nonsense to throw at you. And this guy's whole thing was all of my interviews, all the research, every citation, all my books are invalid. Because I dared to approach a Christian who had also researched the exact same area 28 years ago.
You know, that was interesting because I think it was like last week I had Glenn Kennedy from InSearch.com, a Christian guy, and one of the people in the chat room said, I can't believe, why is Vinny even entertaining this guy? And I go, it is a show. Isn't entertaining the name of the game?
That's hilarious. But, you know, and I would just approach it from the other angle is, you know, rather than killing the messenger, why don't we learn what this guy has to say? What if you're trying to figure out something in your life? And even if 95% of everything the guy says is BS, what if the other 5% that isn't is what you need to save your life? Let's put it in this context for you. You know, like the story of the boy who cried wolf or whatever, or let's say you live on one side of a hill and there's a village on another side of a hill, and you're in your village, you're like the village idiot. You cried wolf too many times. You know, you came running down the hill screaming, ah, the enemy's coming once too many times, and you get to the bottom and all the army's getting their gear on and everything, and you're sitting over on the side. You know, but if they just ignore you and they know that there's an enemy on the other side of the hill, one day it could cost them. So what is the intelligent thing to do is one day you come running down the hill, but this time really the enemy army actually is coming. So what would be the intelligent thing for them to do? Would it be to laugh at you and say, you know, here comes Vinny, the village idiot. Why should we look at him? Or would the smart thing be to do to just stick your head up over the top of the hill and look and go, oh crap, the enemy's coming. Hey guys, let's get going. So what you're doing is, you know, see what that is it's known as a fallacious fallacy. Even if that person has done this thing before, you don't necessarily discount what he says this time because, you know, what if he's telling the truth? And the fallacious fallacy, even though he's using appeal to fear like Alex Jones or something all over the place, you know, you can recognize that even though these are fallacies, there still is a necessary process to verify the information provided and just to check it in your five sense reality and make sure that it's real. And so, you know, in some case, it just may save your life or be the exact piece that you're looking for. But, you know, if I had approached this Christian researcher as, you know, who spent years researching all this stuff, is this guy's an idiot, he's a Christian, he's got nothing to offer, then I wouldn't have learned anything. But I, you know, read the last two chapters in his book, and he came to many of the same conclusions and offered up more stuff and more leads that I was able to follow. And besides his religious bias, which I can, you know, because I know the trivium and the logical fallacies and appeal to belief and stuff like that, I can hold his fallacies over here out of the way and analyze the rest of his data and take what's valid out of it and, you know, not kill the messenger, not throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so rather than using an ad hominem attack, you're Republican or you're gay or you're a Christian or you're this or that, you know, look at the research first, take what's valid out of it, toss what isn't. Here's his religious bias. Here's the data and the citations. I can look at this. I can pick up this glass without becoming the glass, and I can set it down again. We have to just learn to be emotionally detached from the information and not, you know, allow these fallacies or lies to lead us around like a dog on a leash.
And speaking of which, what is your perspective? I mean, in terms of modern news, one thing that's occurred to me is that the news and the vast majority of the things that are reported on it are of no significance or consequence of any kind to anything. They're like completely irrelevant, you know, like a guy's bakery burned down or something like that. You know, these things don't matter in the national consciousness. And what I've found is that you, even though that is my methodology and my assumption of the news, I will still watch the news. And there will be one story within a half hour of BS that'll still be BS, but will be very important, and that'll actually lead me onto a different thing.
Not only that, but if you know the logical fallacies, you can actually reverse engineer what's being said and pull the value or the truth out of it and then go verify what you need, right? But if you don't know the logical fallacies and how those things work, you don't have a way to see it. You just have, you know, you get a funny feeling. See, when you know the logical fallacies by heart, you know, and you've got them where you can just really click them off, you go from that sort of intuitive, funny feeling to, you know, from
to confidence.
To confidence and to knowing exactly what's just happened to you. Like if a car salesman's, you know, like, oh, dude, you're going to get all the hot girls if you get this car. Well, you know that that's an appeal to emotion, right? He's trying to pull on your emotions. And so then you can say, rather than a funny feeling, I don't like this guy. I think he might be lying to me. You can actually identify the exact lies that he's using against you. And, the Trivium is really one of the most ancient systems of mind control. The ancient elites, they would, you know, the seven liberating or liberal arts were kept for the elites. And then the slave classes were given the mechanical and the servile arts, which is what everybody's taught in the compulsory public schools today, is the servile arts. So basically your education is that of equivalent of a slave, you know, 2,000 years ago in ancient Rome. But they can't use it against you if you learn it. The only way they can use the Trivium and these occult arts against you is if you react in ignorance and kill the messenger and don't investigate it before you, you know, say that you have sufficient knowledge of it. And that's exactly what they do. Is all they would need to do is label anything occult, and most people will react out of ignorance and fear and not study it, and therefore they become vulnerable just because of their ignorance and fear.
Well, I find that those who are vulnerable and such easy prey to their own ignorance, essentially they become their own victimizers. They victimize themselves and they become such easy prey for liars and thieves and cheats and scumbags. And sometimes they won't listen, right? They won't listen to reason. And those kind of people, you just leave them, okay? You say one thing, and then you leave them. And you can guarantee that somewhere down the track, they'll probably hear somebody else say the exact same thing that I told them. They ignored me, but because somebody else is telling them, then they start to think about it.
At least you planted the seed. But, you know, the biggest offenders that I come across on a regular basis are typically along the new age hippie sort of crowd, the positive thinkers, right? And everything's
I've only got 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's positive, unbalanced thinking, not critical thinking and verifying the information. And so they're vulnerable to attack.
Yeah, it's not critical thinking. They're just critical of thinking itself. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of today's show. I want to let all the listeners know how intensely grateful I am for your attention. I've been doing this for a number of years, and anybody who knows my backstory, basically I've been struggled to be listened to my entire life. The youngest out of a family of five, fat, opinionated kind of thing. Just got teased all the frack way through high school. Got fired from jobs because I was smarter than the boss and tried to come up with improved methodologies for the business, and they didn't like people undermining them or making them look bad, so they fired my ass, you know. And now I'm getting appreciated for the first time in my life, and I want everybody to know, from all the guests that we have, my mentors, my producer, the guys at AFR, and particularly the listeners as well. You've made me feel all complete. Like the thing that was listening to my life is just being taken seriously, and having people actually care what I've got to say as much as I did, and I feel really good about that.
Well, good. I'm glad you feel good about that.
Mm. Now, speaking of which, heartstrings. This is the great thing that you pull on people. This is one of the fallacies, isn't it? Oh, won't somebody please think of the children? Therefore, take everybody's guns and exterminate what children remain.
Sure. Well, of course, that's an appeal to emotion. That's exactly what they do, you know. And that's exactly what this recent Sandy Hook thing is. And there's too many contradictions in the official storyline, and it definitely has the appearance of a false flag operation. And I posted a few articles about it on my Facebook page the other day. I don't have them in front of me right now, but people should definitely look into the evidence that's building out there, and a lot of it's gaining credibility. And yeah, it's absolutely a method of taking people's guns away, and that's probably the sole reason for it, because simply tyranny has a lot harder time taking hold when people have the ability to defend themselves. So, this New World Order thing has been going on for a long time, and one of the final steps that they really need is to take everyone's guns away. So, you know, just don't have it. And, you know, people really just need to stop listening to these politicians who make up these lies in the first place, and it's a false appeal to authority in the first place. And, as Larkin Rose has so clearly pointed out in his work, that the government is the most dangerous superstition. And, you know, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the show earlier, were we live when I was talking about how the mind control worked? Did the audience hear that?
I can't be sure.
Well, yeah. Well, earlier I was, maybe it was off the air, I was mentioning to Vinny about how, you know, the mind control systems work with
government. No, we definitely did talk about it on air. We definitely did.
Okay, okay, good.
This isn't the shooter you're looking for. And speaking of which, my mate Dan told me last night, he saw footage, I think it was helicopter news footage, of a dude around Sandy Hook running away from the cops, all the cops chasing him, and they pounced on him and grabbed him and arrested him in a bush. And then after that, the cops had a press conference, and the chief of police denied that they caught somebody in a bush.
Interestingly, I think it was exactly a year ago, exactly one block away, on the exact same latitude line, they did one of these mock tests, terrorist tests or whatever, and it was exactly one block away from where this event took place. And there always seems to be these when these false flags happen, a cover of like the London bombing and Dick Cheney having all of that stuff going on 9/11 and all of that. There's always one of these mock things that they're doing right in the
a drill.
Thank you. Right in the background going on. And one block away from Sandy Hook. But yeah, if I can find that reference, there was some really good stuff in it. I'll see if I can find it on my Facebook page, and I'll send it to you, and you can post it up to this show, or maybe interview the person that put it together. I don't know what you want to do with it, whatever, or nothing.
Put me in contact with the person. I'm far more likely to interview somebody for 2 hours than I am to read their content for 2 hours.
Right. Well, it's actually best to do your grammar and read their content and then interview the person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it depends. It depends. I'm really bad at it, and honestly, I need to actually improve myself. You know,
when I talked about that last time, and you had said something about it. Yeah, here's one of the articles here, and it's a New World Society And it's Sandy Hook Elementary Massacre is possible false flag op, and they've got a whole bunch of videos. And I mean, one of the things that they show is it's even right out of the Batman movie, this neighborhood that they did Sandy Hook in. It's right out of the Batman movie. And they showed in the Batman movie this Sandy Hook neighborhood. And they were doing some op in the Batman movie, and this guy exposes this stuff. So here's the link for that.
And holy false flag terrorism, Batman.
Yeah, it's at newworldsociety.ning.com, and I suppose you probably just go from there. You can find it all. And but yeah, it's a pretty extensive article with a number of videos and things up there, and he's got a lot of good evidence that should make people who are capable of filtering the fallacies out and not kill the messenger, you know, look at the evidence before you decide its merit. That's key. Look at the evidence, look at the citations, and then decide its value. Don't be like the fool judge in a court of law who thinks he can, like, judge a case by osmosis and not ever looking at a single bit of evidence, because there is no rational, intelligent human being that would ever accept a verdict from such a judge. So we shouldn't accept this type of quote-unquote thinking as, you know, as okay in any other.
Here's another danger. I believe that there's now been talk of investigation and even prosecution of people who are postulating alternative theories to the official line of Sandy Hook. Have you heard about this?
I haven't heard that, but that doesn't surprise me. It's like, they go after these guys who say anything. There's every event in history, historians just go in and they're allowed to find new evidence and publish it and whatever. But there's only one event in history that's actually illegal for any historians to do any work on and publish anything new other than the official version, and that's World War II. I have never seen any other war or historical event or anything in any other time that was actually illegal to investigate or question or, you know, even publish new statistics or scientific findings that even remotely question the accepted version.
Well, is this in relation to Holocaust denial, is it?
Well, you know, any of World War II, Holocaust, or, you know, they call it Holocaust revisionism or whatever, but, you know, even who's the one expert, Rosenberg, I think, is one of the Holocaust experts. He's dead now. He wrote a 3-book large series. You know, and he published in there that it was that, you know, he did the death counts. And it was roughly 5 million. Well, the official version is 6 million. So even if you cite their own chief sources, you'll be, you know, labeled as a Holocaust revisionist or whatever, even though these are sources that are, you know, and Auschwitz lowered the number, the official number by like a million or something deaths several years ago. And this is, you know, published right on the outside of Auschwitz. But if you actually talk about it or mention it, then, you know, you're suddenly labeled this crazy person for daring to, you know, talk about actual history and not appealing to people's emotions about the thing. I mean, it's like on a plaque right out in front of Auschwitz, you know. I mean, why even argue about it? Just go look at the plaque. It's nothing to get upset about, people, you know.
I'm not responsible for your reaction to the plaque.
Yeah, I'm not responsible for your emotions, your inability to do, you know, to detach from them and focus on this little place that we call reality.
Have you noticed that people get really emotional when you destroy their perception of reality? Not their reality, but just their perception of it, when you say, well, actually, this is what it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they get mad at you and they'll name call at you. You know, it's like Terrence McKenna. Wow, you know, you do not question this guy. You know, it's funny, though, is now that it's after December 21st, 2012, I'm starting to get more people saying, hey, you know, wow, I've been following your work for a while, whereas, you know, even before the day, you know, the emails were like, hey, man, F you, how dare you question Terrence McKenna, my God. And, you know, and I choose to believe that he was a good guy and did all this wonderful stuff that just fooled millions of people down this road, down this path to, you know, accepting humanism and transhumanism and, you know, eugenics philosophies that are based around the UN's Agenda 21 and Fourth World Wilderness conferences, you know, and it's like stuff right directly out of their Fourth World Wilderness material. And George Hunt has done a lot to expose that stuff. But nobody looks at this and connects the dots. They just say, oh, you're attacking my religious or cult hero. Well, I'm sorry. Why don't you just get out of your cult?
Yeah, that's what my producer said. As soon as December 21st, 2012 rolled around,
thank God I don't have to listen to a single freaking New Ager ever again.
Exactly.
You know, and we should. Back in the day, these people used to be stoned to death if their predictions didn't pan out. I'm not saying we do that now. But I am saying that we don't believe, basically, we don't even need to hold to beliefs when there are facts available.
Daniel Pinchbeck has already got a whole new storyline, like the Baha'i Faith or something he's out there pitching now. I mean, he's just...
They just keep moving the goalpost.
They just keep moving the goalpost and pick up whatever nonsense. And I've called him out publicly numerous times, and he'll name call and make all kinds of excuses about it. He'll never focus on the information. He'll always use some appeal to emotion to get his fans to ignore you.
Okay. Jan Irvin, GnosticMedia.com. Thanks for coming on, mate. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.